Okay, so we are at the end of Perek Ches,
the end of the eighth chapter in Shoftim.
And we learned about the descent that occurs at the end, the sort of three stages. First, the ingratitude displayed by Ephraim when they're upset that he didn't call them for war earlier. Then we saw Sukkot and Penuel, which were even worse in terms of their ingratitude, and they don't want to help Gidon, and they really seem to view their alliance with the enemy, as you know, with Midian, as stronger and more of an influence than any concern for the welfare of Gidon and his crew. Aside from fear that maybe we'll get attacked by them, but they don't even like help these exhausted people. You don't have to do a whole lot in order to do so. And even the city that actually has a Migdal that has some kind of a fortress, they also don't. And then we saw Gidon make the ephod after the people offer him the leadership, him and his descendants after him. And he says to them, it's not for me to lead, it's not for my kids to lead, it's for God to lead, which we explained could be read in two different ways. Either he was actually declining and saying, I'm not going to lead. Or he was saying, it's really God who's the leader, I'll be just your figurehead, so to speak. And that's something we're going to have to come back to in a few minutes. But then he takes the spoils and he makes a gold ephod, some kind of a robe, tunic, something like that, and we gave different explanations for what exactly the point of this ephod is, whether it's he's going to be a leader and he's going to wear this, or whether it's in order to emphasize the greatness of the victory, he shows just how mighty Midian was by creating this out of the gold from the spoils, and people will look at it and be very impressed. And we said that unfortunately this becomes a mokesh, this becomes a stumbling block for the nation, and it leads to Avodah Zarah. That was not Gidon's intent, that was pretty much unanimous, but that it's something that happens after his death. So we were up to the last few psukim, the last few sentences in Perek Ches in chapter 8. Specifically, we were up to Pasuk Lamed, sentence 30. We said that Gidon was at home, and according to Mitzudat David, that's how he ends up having all these wives and 70 kids, is because he's around the house. He's not governing the country, even if he is taking the leadership position. He's not really putting any effort into it. He's, as the Pasuk says, Vayeshiv beBeiso, he's sitting at home. Fine. He had 70 kids. He had many wives. And his Pilegesh in Shechem also had a son. And he makes his name Avimelech. Now, when I started preparing the next parak, I found that some actually seem to suggest that the kid names himself Avimelech. In other words, this is not Gidon, who does not seem terribly interested in leading, and certainly his speech is not a I want to control this country type of a thing. It's not him who names the kid, my father is the king. It's the kid who names himself. He takes that title for himself at some point in life, which will fit. That's what you have there also? Yeah. Who are they quoting?
Erlich.
Erlich. Okay, I don't know who Erlich is. But the Dat Mikra has that approach as well. And it makes sense, because in the next parak, Avimelech is going to do exactly that. He's going to try to take the throne himself. So it's Avimelech who's actually naming himself that. But in terms of this business with the many wives and the concubine, I think that's very important in terms of who Midian was. And we've talked about this before, and Midian's influence in terms of leading Jews away from everybody else, but also in terms of inducing idolatry, check, and sexual immorality, going back to the sale of Yosef, which they're agents of, which leads to Potiphar's wife and her pursuit of Yosef, and Moshe marrying a Midianite. And there, things are positive, but also this issue of, and the challenge that's brought, as mentioned in the Gemara, how did you marry a Midianite? Why was that appropriate for you, as Zimri alleged? And then here, the question is, who is this Pilegesh? Who exactly is this concubine? The trend among the commentators is to assume the Pilegesh is Jewish. That tends to be the assumption. But it's going to be very interesting in the next parak. We're going to see Avimelech identify himself as the brother of the Baalei Shechem, the people of Shechem. And it's not clear who these Baalei Shechem are. I'm not sure what to think when it comes to the Pilegesh. But even if we assume that she's Jewish, and that's on the up and up in that sense, nonetheless, the sheer number of wives that he must have in order to have 70 kids is something that's inappropriate. We say that the king, Lo Yarbe Lo Nashim, should not have many wives. And this is not just my note. Mitzudat David notes it. Ralbag notes it. Abarbanel notes it. I brought you on the sheet from Ralbag in source number one as part of his lessons at the end of this unit of Navi. He says, we learn here, She'ein ro'oi la'adam she'en nimshach l'tavas ha'mishagel, that it's not right for him to be drawn after this sort of thing. Hello, Tira ki Gidon lakach pilegesh imayoslo nashim rabos. Gidon takes a concubine along with his many wives. Vayezes siba lahamasas banav. It causes his kids to get killed. Shayu lo minashav. All the kids he has from his wives, ki ben apilegesh hamisam. The son of the concubine killed them. So what Ralbag does is actually...
Give away the story.
Sorry?
You just gave away the story.
Well, no, I had already talked about him killing them anyway last week. But what Ralbag does, though, here, is he says, it's sort of, I don't want to call it disingenuous, it's not disingenuous, but he's making a leap. And he's saying, see what happens when you have too many wives? Your concubine's kid killed all the other ones. He's reading this into cause and effect. Because he does this, because he engages in this kind of polygamy, the result is that one kid ends up killing the others. That's not the usual argument against polygamy, right? Usually the problem is just it's a bad idea.
You could have five kids and they could kill each other.
Right, and it could be from one wife. You don't really need multiple to do that. Right.
Do we know when he married all his wives?
Like, nope.
Did he have a bunch of them maybe before he was in this position?
No idea.
He came to it with all these and... Not that he needed a pilegesh.
Well, you know that he did because remember he tried to get his son before
to
kill the
guy. Right,
so he had
some.
But that was
right.
His first born kid.
Right, but you don't know.
He has to be old enough that he was even had a hobby that it could kill.
Right, but you don't know if he had three wives, five wives, you know, at that point.
No idea. We don't even know how many he has in the end.
Right.
Maybe they were just really prolific. I don't know. We don't have enough information to really figure this out. But what's very clear from Ralbag and others is that we're meant to condemn this. This isn't a good thing that Gidon has this.
Is there ever an amount that's ever, like in Torah, when, like with Shlomo or Melech or anything like that, is there ever an amount said, you know, this is too many or something?
Yeah, so the Gemara says 18 is the max for a king. 18 is the maximum for a king. Wives and Pilagshim. Because the Gemara goes into it based on how many David had. That's how it develops it. But 18 is the cap. There is a limit. And no idea how many Gidon has.
How did the one son get to kill somebody?
Well, we'll get there. It's a good question. We have to get to that. So Pasuk Lamed Gimel, sentence 33, we read the Pesukim ahead already last week.
The truth is,
That's fine.
If Yaakov have 12 with four wives, then 70 is really not so many if you're allowed 18.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you can do the math.
Right, it's not so many per wife if we're going
to 18. It's like 4 kids each.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's four kids each and you have a couple left over.
That's like not, I mean, it could be within the guidelines of 18.
Anything is possible. I kind of wonder if he has to pay tuition for all these kids, why in the world did he refuse the money from the spoils? You see the wife complaining, you made a gold jacket?
I could have gone a little question that.
No, I mean, the farmer's kids, like, you know, you always have them out in the fields helping with the, you know, helping cultivate the land and stuff to provide for the families.
Yes.
They didn't necessarily get educated.
No, I was joking about the tuition thing. I know, former teacher. But
so could we call Gideon the reluctant hero then? Somehow he has to have the miracles going back, way back, to show him that he should be a leader. Right. It's sort of like, I think there was a movie, The Reluctant Harvest.
Yeah, no, it's true. He needs to be, pulled into this. And he has constant messages and constant reinforcement. Then when it's over, he goes home. And especially if you take the view that he's really not leaving, that he told them, no, I'm not interested, that would fit very well. Mm-hmm. Yes, I hear that. So we get the end of Gideon's career here in Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vayi kasher meis Gideon. It was when Gideon died. Vayashuvu b'nei Yisrael. And the Jews backslid. Vayiznu acharei ha-be'alim. They strayed after the Be'alim. So remember, we've already said this before, that Baal is sort of the name of the male god associated with Canaan. But each location has its own Baal. So there's Baal Peor is probably the most famous one. But here, they strayed after multiple Be'alim. Vayasimu lahem Baal Beris le'lohim. They made Baal Berit, which was the local Baal, into their chief god. Now, keep in mind as well that in their encounter with Midian, after the whole thing with Bilam, they caused the whole business with the seduction of the Jewish males by the Midianite women was meant to lead them to Baal Peor. So it was Baal back then with Midian, and it's Baal again with Midian. It's just a different franchise of the Baal. That was Baal Peor. This is Baal Berit. Okay. Well, not okay, but you know what I mean. Fine. V'lo zachru b'nei Yisrael as Hashem Elokeihem. The Jews did not remember Hashem, their God. Hamatzil osam miyad kolei behem misavi, who had saved them from all of their enemies. V'lo asu chesed in beis Yerubal Gideon k'chol ha'tova asher asam Yisrael. And they also did not do kindness with the house of Yerubal Gideon, according to the good that he had done with Israel. A couple of things that are fascinating here within this. First of all, what is their ingratitude to Gideon's family? What was their ingratitude to Gideon's family? So Abarbanel says, if you take a look at number two, he says it's what's coming in the next parak. He said the story is recorded to teach us of the Jews' wickedness. And so on. They said, you and your kids will rule over us. And soon enough, they're going to kill his sons by the sword. Right? It's not Abimelech personally, as we're going to find. So it's meant to show that betrayal, and that's what it means when it says they weren't good to his family. The other way to take it would simply be they didn't follow them as leaders. You know, it's a less bad than murdering them. You notice here, though, that Gideon is named what? No. Close. Yerubal Gideon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Yerubal
Gideon. Sometimes he's Gideon. Sometimes he's Yerubal. Now he's Yerubal Gideon.
It's interesting because they punctuate it here, Yerubal, comma, and then put who was in parentheses Gideon.
Uh-huh. That's an interesting way to address the problem.
That's why I said
Yerubal. Oh, that's why you said it. Got it.
Right, because I was looking at the English.
It's really a very funny thing. It's especially striking because his name is mostly Gideon so far in the story. I did the count on the Bar Ilan, and in chapter 6-8. He is named Gideon 39 times. He's named Yerubal 4 times. So it's very clear he's Gideon. However, in the 9th parak, he's going to be presented 9 times. All of them are going to be Yerubal. He's not going to be. He's done being named Gideon. The Gideon that's here is the last one we're going to.
His name got changed.
Effectively, they go. Well, his name was changed in the beginning. His father was the one who named him Yerubal, right? But that's the one that we're going to use exclusively from here on out. So something's up. You know, to
well,
make a transition.
Like a transformation. Like his father named him Yerubal, and then he was Gideon when he was.
That was his nickname.
Almost doing all of God's work, and now, I don't know, later on, is he back to bad ways? So he's like, I don't know. I'm not really sure. I haven't looked at.
Yeah.
How he's called one way or the other way, but you could look at it as transitions in his behavior, or...
Well, the problem is that after this, he's dead. He stops behaving.
Oh, and he's just referred to?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
So, this is a very weird thing to see.
Radak has one explanation. If you take a look at source number 3, he says, Dai haya be'echad, one name would have sufficed. Ela sheminag halashon kein b'mekomos l'rov ha'hodah. But, you know, that's what it does in various places. It gives more information than it needs to. V'chein beit lechem efrata to beit lechem efrata. Right? Whether it's supposed to be efrata or efrata is actually its own discussion. But the point is that the Radak's answer is, yeah, I see it, okay, I get it, not a big deal. That's his answer. They're both his name. Don't get bothered by it. And there's a similar idea earlier in Rav Sadia Gaon, who says each name refers to a different activity of his, a different role of his. When he's fighting the Baal, he's Yerubal. When he's not fighting the Baal, he's Gidon. Okay. And that goes back to the idea of the behavioral link. Malbim gives a different answer, or based on something that Malbim says. Malbim is bothered, or not bothered, but he notices that in Pasuk Lamed Daled we said the Jews didn't remember Hashem, and in Pasuk Lamed Hey it says they didn't remember Gidon either. So he picks up on that in source number 4. He says, "Bitchuazu, in this salvation, the rescue that the Jews had, Haya Inyan Nisi Eloki." This was a divine miracle. And v'haya ra'ui lizkoras Hashem, they should have remembered God. V'hem lo zachru es Hashem, they did not. Ki yichasuhu le'inyan tiv'i v'l'gvuras gid'on. They associated it with nature. Yeah, we had a tactic, it worked. Gid'on was a great warrior. V'im kein haya lehem lizkoras gid'on k'chol ha'tavah. But then they should have remembered Gid'on was Yoshua. They should have remembered Gid'on and all the good that he did. V'hem shalmu ra tachas tova k'mo sheyavo b'samuch. But instead, they paid him back with bad things, as we find out in the next parak. So, v'kafal beis Yerubal Gid'on, so it doubles up the names, shalo asu chesedim Gid'on mitzachu beis Yerubal, it says the double name because they don't do a kindness with Gid'on and they don't do a kindness with him as Yerubal either. Yerubal fought against the Baal and they went back to worship the Baal. So in other words, it's a betrayal of Gid'on's identity as Gid'on and his family, and it's a betrayal of Gid'on as Yerubal, fighter against the Baal. They betrayed both aspects of him. So it's an all-out betrayal. It's a betrayal of God who did all these miracles for them and gave them the war. It's a betrayal of Gid'on who personally led them, and it's a betrayal of Yerubal as the one who fought against the Baal. All-around disappointment in the nation. I actually think there's another possibility for explaining the way that the name shifts to Yerubal. We'll see it, though, in the next parak. So you're going to have to wait a little bit until parak test. But I think there I'm going to give another explanation about why we're going to switch to the name Yerubal. Actually, and I could say it now. It's not a big deal. If you have... Anyone have a Tanakh or are you all working with Shofar? Some of you have it. No, you can see it yourself. You don't need me. Actually, I wrote it on the sheet, I think. Yeah, I did. The bottom source on the first side. So it's number 7. Mm-hmm. That pasuk from Shmuel Bet. So, this pasuk, the one that I reproduced here, is only... It's really only half a pasuk. Is a statement by Yoav to David HaMelech. If I remember correctly, it was to David. And Yoav refers to Abimelech, who is the son of Yerub Beshet. Right? It's Abimelech, the son of Yerub Beshet. What is the meaning of Yerub Beshet?
Here, from
Bushah, or shame. Right. So there's an element of shame involved in the in this name. Why would you change it from Yerubal to Yerubeshet?
Because he's a son of something to be ashamed of.
I wouldn't assume that. What did the name Yerubal mean? So we took it to mean the one who fights the Baal, right? Yariv fights against the Baal, And now what we're doing is we're changing the name Baal to Besheth. In other words, what we're doing is changing the name of this god to reflect shame instead of power. The name Baal itself suggests some kind of dominance and mastery, right? That's often the way the word Baal is used. Not always, but often that's the way the word Baal is used. So what they're doing is he's renaming Baal to Besheth, to shame, and that's a piece of what he's doing. But it also suggests that had he left it as Yerubal, it would have been a positive name about the Baal, such that he feels the need to make this change. You know what it's like. It's like the Torah itself talks about V'shem Elohim Acherim Lo Saz Giru Lo Yishama Alpicha. You shouldn't mention the names of other gods. They should not be heard upon your mouth. So that a Jew is not allowed to say words that are specifically invoked to indicate the name of an Avodah Zarah. That's a basic principle. If it's a word that has multiple meanings, that's another story. But if it's a word that is understood by everybody who hears it to be a reference to some god, then it's not appropriate for us to mention it, and so we change it. And we have historically had customs of changing names for that reason, even where that specific concern didn't exist. So they say that's the origin of the name Satmar for the Satmar Hasidim, because Satmar was actually, the city wasn't named Satmar, it was Satchu Mer, Saint Mary. So change that to Satmar. I've even heard that there are people who live in St. Louis who when they first started, when Jews started living in St. Louis, did a similar thing. I don't know what the hybrid was to deal with that. So, you know, it's not... You know,
they don't seem to do that, because I know there's like a Young Israel of St. Louis. When I heard that, I thought
yes.
That was really...
Yeah, Young Israel of St. Louis. That's where St. Louis would have davened, for sure.
Given a thought.
Yeah. But in terms of this issue here and the change of the name, I suspect that it's more than just, well, Baal is this name of the powerful god, so I'm going to change it to Beshet, meaning shame. I think it's because the word Yerubal changes in its meaning. We said this way back when, it's like 4 or 5 weeks ago, you don't have to remember it anymore. But we said when we introduced the name Yerubal, that Yerubal means originally not the one who fights against the Baal, but the one who fears the Baal. Yerubal has a positive connotation before it becomes the one who fights the Baal. So that it could be that that's what happens after Gideon dies. Gideon dies and the people start to use this term in a positive way, not as fighter against the Baal, but as one who is loyal to the Baal. Which is why Yoav changed it to the one who was loyal to Beshet, to the one who was loyal to shame. Because he's talking about Avimelech, and the context is clearly an idolatrous context. He's a bad guy. Although we'll have to talk about that too. But the point for us, in any case, is maybe that's the transition of the use of the name. All through this parak, it hasn't really been used. It showed up 4 times versus 39 times that he was called Gideon, and it meant the one who fights against it. But when Gideon is gone, they start using it, and they start using it in the positive sense. And that may be what happened. Okay. The upshot of all of this is a very unhappy ending for 3 Prakim. Right? Things were really nice. Things were great. God did miracles for them. He helped them out. They beat Midian, and then it all went downhill from there. And the lessons that we learn, you know, emerging from this, I think, are on a number of levels. Number one, the issue of the ingratitude of the people and how awful they are to get on by the end, I think in and of itself is an important message. I think the issue of Midian's identity and what they do to us, causing the Jews to separate, is bad, obviously bad. But also I think we get a message here about miracles. Remember when we started this, we talked about how Gideon is going to have all these miracles, then God is going to give him miracle after miracle. He's going to demand miracles. He says, I want a sign, right? And then he burns the food except for the soup. And then he wants another sign, and the wool is going to have the water, you know, the wool will be wet and the ground will be wet. And then Hashem gives him another sign of the dream in the camp, right? And we asked at the time, what is this? All these requests for miracles. And we said at the time that we gave a few different explanations, but one explanation that stood out for me was that you're asking Gidon to do incredible things, therefore give him a sign that you are actually going to be on his side, that you're going to support him. We went back to Moshe with this, went back to Abraham with this. And I wonder now if we're also not getting a message about where all of this goes. In other words, God gave you all the signs, and in the end, what happened? You're right, you fought your war, you won the war, and then everything went, south. There's nothing redeeming out of all of it.
He had 2 wives and had 70 children.
Right. It just speaks to the question of why there are no miracles. Why is it that God doesn't do this? And the answer is because it didn't help. It wasn't any better than when there were no miracles. If anything, it may have been worse. So therefore, he says, enough with the miracles. What do I need it for? Let me try a different route. Okay. So that is the end of Perek. That's the end of Gidon's narrative, but we get Gidon's epilogue, and that's going to be Perek Tet, chapter 9.
I'll start the recording for it.